Pickaxe.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to the Review of Death, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. I'm Matthew Toffolo. I'm joined as ever by Billy Garrett-John. Say hello, Billy.
Hello.
It's 7:30 in the morning where you are. Well, maybe not.
It's 6:44 in the morning where I am.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got up at 5:50. That's my usual wake-up call for Review of Deaths. I love this, so of course I woke up at 5:50.
That's
after
devotion.
A late night. Oh, it's dedication, it's devotion, it's all those things.
Insanity.
Hey, look, it is crazy. So by the time this episode comes out, God knows who else is going to come back to Doctor Who. But we have to immediately discuss Bonnie Langford's return to Doctor Who as Mel.
Yeah.
Which sounds like something we would say for a laugh.
It's really weird, isn't it? But it was rumoured. It feels like so long ago now. And yet, we all assumed it was for Power of the Doctor, because she did turn up in Power of the Doctor. And yet, here she is. She's back again in Shooty's series.
It's crazy.
Why? How? Where's Sabalom Glitz? Well, he's dead. But where's, what was she doing on planet Earth in the 21st century again?
Those questions all sound like things Russell would put below an Instagram post to get people excited. God knows to all of those questions is the answer I would offer. It's just a bit bonkers in that it came totally out of left field and was one of those rumours that, like you say, had been going around for ages, but you just think, well, no.
Yeah.
Of course not.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing she's going to be part of this unit thing, this unit family.
I guess
so. I don't know what her qualifications are. She's a computer programmer.
Yeah, well, there's that, isn't she? And she's obviously been in space, and so she's got previous.
She's travelled with the Doctor. She has got previous.
If we don't count Big Finish, the only alien menaces she's met are Ken Dodd and Tetraps. Oh,
all of those are pretty frightening, to be fair.
Yeah.
And the dragon.
The dragon.
Yeah. Weird. And the pool robot, the pool cleaning robot.
Oh, yeah.
I guess
and Cannibal,
it's not really an alien,
Cannibal Grannies.
Cannibal Grannies, which are the scariest of them all. So the photo that they shared was her with all this, in like a sort of... Well, it's that helipad... outdoor set that people had found a photo of a helicopter that had flown over.
Yeah.
How did people get hold of that anyway? Are people really flying drones and helicopters and shit over the studios and taking photos of things?
I mean, nothing surprises me these days, Billy.
That's
people have got
crazy.
Too much time on their hands.
Loads, too much. So, interesting. I guess she must be part of this new unit. And, I know we are thinking that there's a unit spin-off, so this all but confirms it,
I
guess.
Think so, yeah.
A funny choice for people to come back. But she is a great performer.
Yeah.
Like anyone who's seen her in EastEnders
knows that. Yeah.
She is an all-round entertainer. She's a dancer. She's a singer. She's all those things. Russell, I'm sure, adores her for all of those reasons, because she's such a versatile, multi-talented individual. So I mean it's going to be exciting to see how all the new Doctor Who fans take to her that come through Disney Plus and shit, and go like, oh my god, she was like really underused and in the classic series.
Well, this is it, isn't it? You know, it's almost like with Mel, you almost have a blank slate to do whatever you want to do with her because her character was so wafer thin back in the day. You know, did even the computer science thing, did that ever come up? Computer programmer? No. Did it
will
even
we ever
mentioned?
See Pease Pottage? Will we finally see what her life looked like? Yeah. You know,
will we finally get the answer to how the Doctor first met her? Because we still don't know that.
I hope. I can't rely on Big Finish for that kind of thing.
No.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Also, talking of Big Finish, I guess maybe we could talk about that Starlik's Genesis of Terror thing.
Oh, yeah, that's doing the rounds as being
that seemed to
a bit
go
of a
down
terror.
Like a cup of cold sick, yeah, which is pretty grim, but maybe indicative of a conversation we need to be having about whether or not Big Finish should be doing these kind of things, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, it just seems
like... It feels like they're kind of stretching the definition of, you know, what people will part with their money for.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, the cover looks nice.
It does.
But, I mean...
But then it looks just like the DVD cover. It's the same... It's got the same colour and motifs and shit.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's a weird one. I think by the time this goes out, Once and Future, number two, will be out.
Yes.
Because I think that's coming out tomorrow, as of recording
this. Oh, good. Okay, then.
So we'll be able to do that soon. So yes, I don't know
Patreon,
if people at home will have... If you're a patron, will have heard our review of it just yet, but it will be...
No, they won't. It'll be at the end of this month, I think.
Yeah, so that's still to come if you're a patron. And if you're not, sign up.
And, yeah, exactly. And also our commentary of Doctor Who Shakedown Return of the Sontarans.
Yeah.
That is going to be coming up very shortly as well, which is... Or already would have come out, which is cool. So you can go and watch that now. Only other bit of housekeeping to do is to say that I've been to my first convention in New Zealand.
What was that like?
Mental. It had Michelle Gomez and Sacha Dhawan as like two of the main guests, but they weren't on any of the flyers.
Right.
But they were certainly, weird. I feel like they were probably the highest profile names there.
Right.
Joffrey from Game of Thrones was there. Is that his name?
Joffrey.
And a bunch of voice artists. But it's weird how it seems to be dominated by anime, animation, wall-to-wall body pillows, which was a bit odd.
Right,
lovely. A lot of that. And loads of pop vinyls. So I've got even more of a hatred for pop vinyls now because they take up so much bloody space. It was really odd. And then also, they've got these really good rules around not taking weapons or like swords and guns and stuff into the events. And since the Christchurch shooting, what was that, like 3-4 years ago? You can't wear like camo. You can't wear two items of camo. Like you can wear camouflage trousers, but then you have to have something else on top.
Yeah.
So they're really good with stuff like that. And loads of things, loads of signs around saying... cosplayers not consent and, you know, ask people if you want to take photos of them, which was, you know, really good.
Yeah.
But they sell like fucking massive katanas and weirdly, you know, realistic looking guns in there with all these rules about not bringing your own in.
Weird.
And they had like shooting ranges in there with air guns and shit.
Right.
So that was just a bit odd. I don't know if the American conventions like that, but it felt much more like a comic, like San Diego than it did London Comic Con.
Okay, interesting.
And no Doctor Who.
Wow.
Anywhere.
Really? Nothing at all?
Nothing at all. The only thing I could find, I'm sure there were pop vinyls, but there may not have even been pop vinyls. The only thing I could find was somebody who was selling jewellery and they had like maybe a TARDIS one.
Right.
And there were loads of like cheap t-shirt stalls taking over like whole corners of the convention hall, and they had some knockoff Doctor Who t-shirts there.
Right.
But you know, give me a dreary hotel conference room any day of the week, man. Like it was just a bit commercialized, you know. It just felt like they're trying to wring every penny out of it.
Weird.
Yeah, but it was fun, and thanks to Sam for taking me along, and also thanks to Sam for my Target books, which nice. Are now littered around the space. It was an entertaining experience. It was enlightening, but it was weird. Yeah.
Now, on the subject of Target books, you recently tweeted that you were reading Pyramids of Mars in bed with Stell. And you were doing the voices. Yes. How long was it before she said, right, cut that out?
Oh, she falls asleep before she can get bored by it, which is great. It's literally a sleeping aid for her. But my dad still does the same. My dad does that for Mum.
Oh, that's nice.
He reads her a Target book. He'll pull a Target book off my shelf when I'm not there.
Right.
And then he'll read, he loves the Pertwee's because he can do his Pertwee impression, and it really winds Mum up and makes her laugh.
Right.
So that's really sweet.
Oh, that's really nice.
But yes, of course, I was doing all the voices. I haven't got to anything involving Sutek yet. And I wasn't rolling my R's when I was doing Nameen's voice because I just felt like, even though it's the two of us here, it's a bit racist. So I didn't do any of that, but there we go. Right, okay, we can't put it off anymore, Matt. We have to talk about it. We're
going from a really good story, Pyramids of Mars, to one of the worst stories, I guess, isn't it, really?
The Forest of the Night. Are we going to draw that distinction already?
Well, yeah, we are, because earlier this morning, you sent me a WhatsApp, which you put on Twitter, saying that you were furiously jotting down notes. And before I left the house today, Annie said to me, "What did you even write down?" And I went to check my notes, and I literally stopped taking notes at the point where the tiger appeared. And my brain just switched off, and I was just like,
"Marvelous!"
No, that's what I did on a rainy Sunday afternoon. Was watch that.
I'm sorry. I know. I the thing is, it's all fun and games. Us sort of saying, oh, let's do this one next or whatever.
Yeah.
But then we actually have to watch it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can't watch Pyramids of Mars or Genesis or The Five Doctors or Blink for every episode. We have to chuck a couple of stinkers in there.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I was excited to go into it because I hadn't seen anything of Series 8 for a really long time.
Yeah.
And I remember being really excited for Series 8, but I have no memory whatsoever of this. I've never watched it since.
Really? Okay.
Broadcast. No.
I have a sneaking suspicion that you didn't mind it when it first went out.
I probably didn't. I mean, people can find it because we reviewed Series 8, didn't we? That was the first, like, full series we did a review
of. I think it was. Yeah,
YouTube.
It was.
So anything we said there, we've changed. We're grown up. Let's just cover our asses for anything we said
in that video. I don't think mine has changed that much.
No, it probably hasn't. Into the Forest of the Shite. Well and truly, I broke my notes down into, partly anyway, things I liked and things that irrationally annoyed me, to a point where you think, why are you watching, you know, why would you put yourself through it? But very quickly, UK number one, All About That Bass by Meghan Trainor. Matt, give us a rendition.
God, no. No.
Yes.
No.
You are the musical theatre one out of us.
I am not singing that gobshite. It feels apt that should be the song that
I know what you mean. And it was like number one for like 4 weeks or something. It was just incessant. Stell loves Meghan Trainor. I can't stick her.
What? Oh,
I know.
Stell,
she loves
down
that
in
one.
My estimations.
I can put my Gucci on. I can wear my Louis Vuitton. But even with nothing on, I made you look.
I don't know that one, but...
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know,
thanks for
I
that.
I just have to get it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like therapy for me. 2014 in film, the first John Wick had just come out.
Oh, right, okay.
The week before this.
Yeah.
Interstellar is a week away from coming out.
Okay.
And Guardians of the Galaxy was the biggest film of the year.
There you go.
What did you think of number three, Matt? We've both seen it now, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. I really enjoyed it, you know? I thought it was really good. I liked it more than the second one. The second one I just thought was okay. I was a bit disappointed with number two compared to the first one, because the first one was so brilliant. But I really enjoyed this one, and I was, I mean, it really tugged at your heartstrings.
Oh my God,
from the
didn't
off,
it?
Didn't it really? But yeah, really, really good stuff. Really good stuff.
Really cool. I only really remember the second one for having My Sweet Lord in it, when they're like going to his dad's planet.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. And they're like flying through it. Anyway, all I want to say is Dave Bautista is a better actor than The Rock. And he picks better films.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And he's
which is nice.
Not a total tosser, like trying to shoehorn himself into the DC universe.
So
and
people
all that stuff.
Hate him, right? For the DC Black Adam stuff? People are like not
a fan? Yeah, because he tried to make it out like he was God's gift and was going to completely change the face of the films. And I think Warner Brothers were really pissed off that he was doing this. And this was like his own publicity that he was doing. So Warner were like, fuck you. And obviously got James Gunn in. And then they were like, yeah, by the way, your film was bollocks. Didn't make any money. So we shan't be calling you back. So this is why, this is the reason why he's made up with Vin Diesel and is doing another Fast and Furious film.
Right.
Because he was like, oh shit, all my plans to have a The Rock DC universe have completely crumbled.
What? So he was going to be like what James Gunn has now turned into for them?
I think that's what he liked to think. No one at Warner thought this. This was just him.
Does he read comic books? Does he know anything about comic books?
Apparently he does, but his ego was so huge that, I mean, Black Adam is Shazam's key villain. And so really, he should have been in one of the Shazam films. But he was like, no. I'm not just being a baddie in a film. I want my own film because I'm The Rock. It's like, right, okay. And then he was like, and I'm not fighting Shazam because no one knows who that is, even though Black Adam is his villain. And he's like, I want to fight Superman. So his whole thing was like trying to get Henry Cavill back as Superman. And then obviously was a complete balls up. To the point where he was like saying to Cavill, yeah, come on, you'll be back. We'll do more films with you. And Cavill went off and was like, yeah, I'm doing more films. And then like a couple of days later, I had to say, oh no, I'm not doing any more films. They've got rid of me.
Shit. Hey, look, any excuse not to talk about this episode of Doctor
Who? I know, it's been good.
Okay, now, right, this is the
this shipper, is it, come on.
Right, let's go. Written by Frank Cottrell Boyce, who also wrote the Series 10 episode Smile. Apologies, everybody. I said in the last episode this was his only contribution to Doctor Who.
I mean, I forgot as well. I didn't have a clue. I'm not really a fan of Smile, to be honest.
No. Maybe we should do a Frank Cottrell Boyce, like, season. we should do Smile.
Revisited.
Right. My research for this, Matt, because I watched everything quite, you know, the 11th hour.
Yeah.
You were supposed
to be watching In the Forest of the Night, not the 11th hour.
No, God, I wish I was watching the 11th hour.
Yeah.
My research was watching Doctor Who Extra, which is a 10-minute little behind the scenes. It's basically confidential.
Right.
But they couldn't give less of a fuck about it, right?
Right.
Like, all the interviews are just the big mass junket things that they would have done with Moff and Capaldi at the end of the thing. Jenna Coleman isn't interviewed for it. She may be interviewed in the other ones, but I didn't see her. And I will talk a bit more about Extra later.
So where was this episode? Where did this come out?
This was I watched it on. Wouldn't it have come out on iPlayer? Was it iPlayer exclusive or was stuff going out on BBC Three still at that point?
I can't remember. I can't imagine it was BBC Three, but maybe it was iPlayer.
No. Must have been iPlayer exclusive. And then they put them on the DVDs as well, I guess.
Oh, see, don't even get me started on this era of home media releases. Where it was like, oh, we'll put YouTube content onto the DVDs and call that the special features. Bullshit.
Horrendous.
I want real stuff.
At least we've got the collection sets. That kind of makes up for
modern
shite.
We can only hope that we will eventually get Series 8, the collection set, with a sit-down interview with Peter Capaldi saying, right, where did it all go wrong?
Where did it all go wrong? I think the rot set in at this point. I think he's already not enjoying it.
Do you think?
Yeah, I'll talk about it a bit later, but I kind of feel like this is a good example of them trying to pull him in one direction and he's trying to get away from that.
Okay, interesting.
But we'll get on to it. Yeah. But of this episode, in Doctor Who Extra, he says, Forest of the Night is an absolutely wonderful story that takes us into the heartland of the dark and mystical fairy tale. And that's it. That's all he has to say about it.
Wow.
So
it sounds like he really thought about that. How can I polish this turd?
But it really sounds like, you know, those junkets that go viral where the actors are just like, I don't want to be here and I'm really struggling with things to say about my character in this thing. Like, you know, just desperate. So let's start off with
Wavy Hand
Girl.
Ugh, Maeve.
Maeve, spelt M-A-E-B-H. Undoubtedly, yes, Coal Hill has turned into a private school now. Runs through a forest and she meets the Doctor. She's Clara's pupil from her year 8, I think, gifted and talented class.
Yeah. So I watched this with a teacher.
I was going to ask about this.
Holy shit, it was so good watching it with Annie because now that she's obviously completed her training, she was just like full into, this is insane, you know, what? These are the worst teachers that ever existed. So
besides the fact that they lose their pupil, and they don't really seem to care that much.
No.
And I don't feel like they've been directed to, like when they stand in the forest, like Danny Pink's always got his back to his class or whatever. If he's not leading them through, like he doesn't gather them, he's not sort of keeping an eye on them.
That is exactly what Annie said. She was like, well, you know, you two have gone off to have your little chat. They're all in the background running amok. Could have been going anywhere.
I know.
You know, no wonder they lose these bloody kids.
It's unbelievable. And then they don't know about the medical history of one of their pupils.
Yeah.
Like, this girl's peers know more about the fact she has to take medication for her thing.
Yeah. Well, Clara mentions it. Clara does say...
Oh, does she?
She does in the TARDIS. She does say something.
But I'm sure there's a bit where they... Maybe Danny has to have it explained to her him. I don't know where I got that from then, but I'm sure that there's a scene or something where they're wondering kind of what's up with her, and they don't know what her condition is. They just know she's got to take
tablets. They don't really expand upon it, do they?
With
good reason, because clearly this is being written by someone who has got a fucking clue what they're talking about.
And it's clearly.
What it'd be like if you were a kid and you were hearing voices, but actually those voices are mystical spirits or whatever the feck these tree things are.
What are they?
I don't know. Because we were literally having this discussion at home just before I came in. And she was like, are they aliens? No. I thought, are they aliens? And she was like, no, they're like tree spirits. I was like,
That's what I wrote down.
I don't know. I mean, it's wishy-washy. It's a real wishy-washy story.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. So Maeve says that... okay. Well, let's talk about something that is really good here. And that's Peter Capaldi with those kids.
Peter Capaldi is brilliant in this story. Yeah.
He's great. He's really good. And I think that he's really great with kids in all of the episodes where kids are involved. Even if the child actors aren't great or if the characters are really annoying, like, you know, the girl in The Caretaker from earlier that series, you know. And he's great with them. And I love the way that this is directed. I should have looked up who directed it, but like, that POV shot from Maeve where he's looking down at her.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Explaining the TARDIS. And then, you know, a really nice bit. It's not really signposted that much, but he hasn't asked her name.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And she's on board the TARDIS. And you get that lovely shot where it's just looking down at her and his finger comes into view and says, what's your name? He's great in this.
Yeah.
He's definitely the best part of it. And he is Doctor Who, isn't he? He's like,
this was
he embodies it.
He really does. Like, watching it back, I mean, I haven't, like, well, I haven't watched any Peter Capaldi stories in a very long time. But watching this, it really just made me think, oh, I miss you. I miss seeing you on TV because you were so good. And, you know, he was a missed opportunity, really.
Huge missed opportunity,
Because he was so excellent. And it's such a shame that we didn't get more episodes with him. But any time he is on the screen, he lights it up. You know, same as like Tom. You know, we've said this before when we were watching something like Underworld. I think we said, you know, the story is crap, but whenever Tom comes on, even if Tom looks like he can't be asked, you know, you still sort of feel like, oh, okay, you know, this scene is better because Tom's in it. Or Twin Dilemma with Colin. You know, that is a prime example. And that's literally what Peter Capaldi does with this story. And like you said, with the kids, he's just got that wonderful parental thing, but he does feel like that mad uncle that, you know, that your parents would probably say, oh God, you know, don't spend so much time with him because he's a bad influence. But
he's on a register, yeah.
Well, not maybe not that, but you know what I mean. You know, he's that maverick, and you know, he's the one who sort of say, oh look, come on, we'll go out and have some dessert before your dinner or whatever. You know,
yeah, just right.
Get you into mischief.
He's he's alien, isn't he?
Yeah,
like he's got that Tom alien quality where he's dangerous.
Yeah,
to a degree.
Yeah.
But you know you'd be safe with him.
That's it. And the
he
story
would get you into scrapes, but the story get you out does of it as well.
The story does a good job of trying to send that message, because there are times when you think, oh, he's a bit irascible, but you know, you get this sense that with Clara and even the kids, you know, they feel like he's the one to be around. You know, even though they don't know who he is, these, you know, the kids, but you know, there's just obviously something about him. And you know, bugger me, I'd go off into time and space with Peter Capaldi's Doctor. It'd be a right laugh.
I bet you would, you dirty boy. this is the point I was going to make earlier about maybe he. I mean, what do we really know if something went wrong, quote unquote? Like, what, you know, with his run, like, did he fall out of love with doing it? Do we think, like, what's the sort of general feeling?
I don't know. I think it's just that. It's just that the audience just did not take to the irascible element of his Doctor. And I think at times, particularly in those earlier stories, he can be quite spiteful and quite mean-spirited. Whereas in this one, I think any of that prickliness is quite playful and done quite fun. More like a Bill Hartnell, I think. Or like a Tom.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's that sort of the put downs or the sarcasm, you know, it's all done with a bit of a twinkle, and you know, you can,
yes.
you don't take it too seriously. So I think with this story, I actually put in my notes that I think this story should have come earlier in his run, really, because I think that slightly softer portrayal has the balance is sort of there.
Yes.
You know, it's not quite as, I mean, I don't necessarily mind that he can be a bit of a bastard, Capaldi's
it's
Doctor.
It's another element to his character. Like, at least it gives him a character.
Yeah,
you know?
Because otherwise they
it
all
gives him something to do that's different. And
yeah, that you know, you're just another, you know, the David Tennant or another Matt Smith.
Exactly, and they're just sort of jolly and happy all the time, and you know, it's like, well, it's not like that. But I kind of feel like he's being written in a way that he isn't overly enamored with,
right.
Like there's a few scenes where he's on the TARDIS and he's sort of, I think he might be talking to Clara on the phone, and he's just kind of playing Malcolm Tucker just without the swearing. And I know that was something that people were saying going into it, and I think maybe people have said since, but it's like he's been hired to do that,
right?
Kind of in a different way to William Hartnell when he came on to Doctor Who and he was doing playing grumpy Sergeant Majors and criminals and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then he's finally got this opportunity to do something else.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like Peter Capaldi isn't being given that opportunity, at least in this first year of him playing Doctor Who. I feel like he's being dragged into being Malcolm Tucker with a blue box, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a fair assessment, but I think series 10 is probably, you know, we've said it loads of times, like, yeah, that's where he finds his rhythm. And I think that's probably closer to where he wanted to start, maybe.
Yeah.
We know, we've told this story before, but I don't know if we've told it on the podcast version of the Review of Death, but I was quite pally in the DMs with a writer from series 8 and other series of Doctor Who, and of modern Doctor Who. And he told me that when he wrote his episode for this series, he was sending in his drafts, and then he was getting them back and being given notes, no, make him meaner.
Right.
And then sending it back, no, make him meaner. And it went back a few times to the point where they said something like to me, I wasn't writing them as the Doctor anymore. Mm. They didn't recognise the character on the page.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I go that far. I think it's better here than it is in other episodes. But
yeah.
I you know, that always sticks in my mind, that even the people writing it weren't confident that they were writing the right Doctor, the right character,
yeah,
for him.
And I guess, you know, the end result of that is felt in the following year, you know, because
yeah,
they try and do such a pullback with everything and try, yeah, and soften him and try and make him, you know, wacky grandpa, to the point where then that feels weird, because he's like, well,
yeah, it's like an obvious U-turn, isn't it?
That's it, you know. And you know, you get him saying weird bits of dialogue. Like, I think at one point in, might be that Viking story, he says something like, oh yeah, baby, which I think has been dubbed in ADR because you don't actually see him say it, and you think, Christ, you know, why are you saying that? That just sounds insane. And he probably thought it as well. But
we've had Dr. Funkenstein, I think that's series 8 or series 9.
Yeah, that's series 9. Dr. Disco,
which I don't mind so much, because I like Parliament, and I popped for that reference anyway, yeah, when it happened. And what's the other? Oh, big sexy woman,
oh, yeah,
to the dino. But that's, you know, it, yeah, I don't know. He does hit the right marks, but there's a bit of a disconnect, I think, somewhere in the writing or in coming up with this Doctor. There's been a, I don't know if they misinterpreted what the audience want. I mean, they clearly did, because like we say, there's that massive U-turn with series 9.
I think the best way to think of it is, like, imagine if you gave John Pertwee a Matt Smith script, or a David, yeah, Tennant script. Well, it would sound insane, wouldn't it? Because John Pertwee, you know, can you imagine John Pertwee going, yes, Alonzi, Joe, or, you know, or some of the weird, you know, or doing that Ghostbusters bit in Army of Ghosts.
I love,
you
know, chips. I love chips.
So, you know, John Pertwee loves chips. Yeah, you know, it would just sound weird. And I think this is kind of what the problem is. You have an actor who wants to be Doctor Who that he remembered.
Mm.
But, you know, unfortunately, the script...
It doesn't work.
Necessarily
that is
works.
Not the Doctor now. That's, yeah, not how people want David Tennant. You,
yeah,
know, like, clearly they want David Tennant because he's come back enough times.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. Like, they are trying. This is why we could not write that program, because we are classic Doctor Who fans, and
yeah,
we're always going on about it should be done more like this. But then when it's done like that, it fucking just doesn't work.
Yeah,
it's just it's not the same show. It's not the right tone for it anymore.
Yeah.
But they could have. Did they not learn? Even in the classic series, like, Colin Baker's Doctor,
I know,
was
mad,
universally disliked by the audience at the time because he was really unpleasant.
Yeah.
And you think, this is the same problem.
Yeah.
And they didn't learn from it. And
yeah,
and people on the show too kind of stubborn to realise that this was not going to work, or I don't know. Anyway,
I mean,
that's the Capaldi chat, I think, sort of,
yeah,
covered, right?
Fair enough. Yeah.
Because we've sung his praises, and we've also said how annoying he is, you know, the 12th Doctor is in this kind of capacity.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty balanced, you know.
I think so. I mean, that is my big takeaway, is that he is the best thing in this story.
Yeah.
And it was a pleasure seeing him as Doctor Who again, because I miss him. I miss him terribly.
He's not dead. So, you know, he's still around.
He's my favourite new Doctor.
And that's so nice.
They cocked him up.
They did. They cocked him up royally. Yeah, at least Series 10's all right.
Series 10's
so, up. The trees have sprouted up all over London. Art department, I think, did quite a good job with this one.
Yeah. Shame about that London bus.
Shame about the London bus.
I paused it and I said to Annie, I said, now, look at that bus. And she went, what? She was like, what are they doing on there? And I was like, I don't know. You tell me.
Nuts. But, you know, it's a great visual and it's very Doctor Who. I was watching it.
Yeah.
You know, kind of in more of a sensibility of like, you know, what's this quirky British show all about? If you just put it on. Excuse me. I whacked my mic. RIP headphone listeners. If you just put it on.
Yeah.
And you had no real idea what the show was about, but you knew it's kind of quirky sci-fi. It's British. And that first shot going up Nelson's Column and seeing,
which is, you know, a callback to the Santarin experiment, the original script, because I think that's what Bob Baker and Dave Martin originally envisaged.
Right.
that they would see.
Further evidence that in Cardiff there is a filing cabinet full of rejected ideas that they just drag out and paste on top of scripts. But that's a great reveal.
Yeah.
The idea is great. It, like I say, it's so Doctor Who just to have a forest and then have like, you know, red phone boxes and traffic paraphernalia and stuff lying around. It looks really, really cool.
I mean, I think really the start of this story is actually quite good. I really enjoyed the start of the story. I think it's just as it goes on and nothing really sort of happens. And I think the resolution is just all a bit like, huh?
Oh, don't even get, we'll get there. But I mean, I don't know why and how, really, are the questions I have coming out of this. I don't know what. So that those sprites that appear around Maeve are like tree spirits, I guess. Yeah. But she's responsible for them growing because her sister is missing.
Is it? I can't remember.
But she says that I did this or something, or that's the tree speaking through her. But that's before the Doctor just sonics gravity.
Yeah.
You know, and fucking everybody can see these sprites.
Yeah. Doesn't he like slow down time or something? Doesn't he like slow down time so they move slower so they can see?
I thought he said something like everything has a reaction to gravity.
Oh yeah, maybe.
And he sonics the air, something like that.
I don't know.
Fuck off! What do you mean? That even for Doctor Who standards and techno babble, that's like, you know. They're cloaked, they're shielded.
Yeah.
Say something like that, you know, like, what the fuck has gravity got to do with it? This period of Doctor Who really just pushes the wrong buttons for me.
Yeah.
You know, you have those people in your life sometimes where they just sort of rub you up the wrong way.
Yeah.
And like, it's irrational.
Yeah.
And you can't quite explain it because they're probably lovely, but
so about them just annoys you. Yeah.
I really didn't want it to turn into like a, but then we picked this episode to watch, so I don't know what anyone was expecting.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to turn into a hate train, but it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, I was already, like 2 minutes into writing it, all caps, you know, like, I don't know if you can make out, but a lot of my notes are just capital letters.
Right.
So, like, the government, their idea of how to save London is to burn it down, right? So this is clearly the same government that came up with Eat Out to Help Out.
Yeah.
Bit of satire there.
Yeah.
and the trees pop up because there's a solar event, a solar flare, and they're protecting the Earth.
Yeah.
But the girl says it's to do with her, and that's somehow tied into her sister who's gone missing, who, let's just talk about it, just fucking appears out of a bush at the end of the story.
I fucking hate that so much. It is so dumb because probably someone at Cardiff went, "Oh, you've got to resolve that. You know, people will be upset if they don't get reunited," and they're just like, "Oh, fine." She just pops out of a bush, and like, what is?
But she's been there the whole time. Like, what?
I don't know. And it's so weird because like, at the end when all the trees disappear, I thought to myself, I was like, well. Why? Why do they all disappear? And why don't all the trees disappear? Why have they been like, oh, well, we'll leave that one on the end of that road because that looks nice.
But that is totally. So because she comes out of that, but this is after all the trees disappeared. She comes out of the bush and then that bush disappears.
Yeah.
So is the inference that she was in that bush all the time, even before the fucking trees popped up? She was just in a bush at the end of their fucking road. Like, what is going on? What is happening?
You know, mother didn't look very hard, did she?
No, she didn't. She obviously didn't care. And the police are fucking useless.
She put the bins out one night and she heard some rustling. It's just foxes in the...
I knew we shouldn't have hired sniffer dogs with no noses. Like, what the... you know, shit me.
Hello and welcome to the Eurogamer Newscast. And this week we're discussing the biggest Xbox leak in history. We're looking ahead to the Switch 2's potential launch lineup. We're asking why there are so many industry layoffs. Or at least that's what I would be saying. If you're listening to the Eurogamer Newscast, hello, I'm Tom, Eurogamer's editor and host of our weekly discussion podcast, where we break down the biggest gaming news stories and share insight from our news reporting team. Head to your favorite podcast app now to listen. Just search Eurogamer Newscast.
Okay, something else that's really annoying, and I can see that on my microphone it's kind of going a bit orange and red when I'm talking, so I'm going to try and calm down. I am going to talk about
something. Oh, and her mum is hopeless as well. She's not very good.
Yeah. No, I don't think anybody comes out of this looking great.
No.
Although, apart from Capaldi and maybe one other, but I'll talk about them in a minute.
Okay.
So, Clara Oswald.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Her whole thing, right, and I'm starting to understand it a bit more now, and maybe watching more of her episodes, I'll get a new appreciation for it, or I'll kind of understand it a bit more. But her thing is that she wants to be the Doctor, or she thinks she can be on the same level as the Doctor, as like an intellectual and as like an adventurer and all that kind of stuff. And so basically her character is that she has the Doctor sussed out.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and you see companions do that, you know, like Sarah Jane does it. Everybody does it. That kind of, I think Clara in this episode says something like, he's pretending not to be interested.
Yeah.
But in a minute, he'll say something really clever and get us out of this.
And I think that's fine. I like that stuff. I think, yeah, you're all right doing that. But it's...
Yeah, totally.
It's all the bloody... the preachy stuff when she's like, oh, you know, you go off in your box, you know, this is planet Earth, we're doing this for you, Doctor, or whatever she says. And she's giving him a bloody sermon. And I just think, shut up, you daft cow.
I know. But, like, she humbles him, right?
Yeah.
And that's okay, you know. But it's a major kind of development in the Doctor's character. I'm not saying that he hasn't been humbled before or hasn't been spoken to in this way by other companions. But he just gets fucking... I mean, it's totally the wrong word, but it's the only thing I could think of when I was typing my stuff up. He kind of cucks her, you know? Like... She chops his balls off because, and so all he's got left at that point is to just be unpleasant.
Yeah.
Because she's got him totally worked out. She knows exactly how his brain works. And that humbles this omnipotent alien character to a point where he's just as irascible and just as unpleasant and just as, at fault and imperfect as the rest of us.
Yeah.
But I don't want the Doctor to be like that. I don't see the Doctor in that way. The Doctor, to me, doesn't have to be perfect all the time, but shouldn't be second fiddle, basically, to this smart ass who's come on board and thinks she fucking knows everything.
Yeah.
And that is her. That is the issue I have with her character, is that she just... She thinks she's as good as...
Yeah.
This sounds so mean and rude, doesn't it? But, like, she thinks she's as good as the Doctor, or can be an intellectual equal. And I guess that her arc is resolved to prove that she is misguided in that thinking.
Yeah.
Because she tries to take on the mantle of the Doctor and it gets her killed.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make her... that doesn't endear her to me for the rest of the time she's on the TARDIS, that she's just like this.
Yeah.
But I think Stephen Moffat just kind of writes female characters in that way, that they do... They do have all the male characters in the script by the balls all the time.
Yeah, and it's the same with Sherlock, isn't it? And I don't... Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. You know, they're either like that and then, like, uber sexy, like River Song, right. And it's all innuendo and this, that, and the other. There never seems to be a middle ground, or just a normal person who talks and acts like a normal person.
And that doesn't mean they have to be meek or sort of like,
no, not at all.
You know, quiet as a church mouse and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But
I think Danny Pink is written probably the most normal.
I tell you
out
what, he's the other person in the story I think is really good. Samuel Anderson, he is great.
Yeah, I completely forgot about Danny Pink.
Yeah, I know. He existed. Yeah. There you go. If you go on the Review of Death Twitter, you can see a photo of me with him in a pub in Bristol. Yeah. And he was lovely. Really nice guy. Absolutely fab dude.
Yeah.
Likes his blues, likes his jazz. And also on the Doctor Who Extra that I watched, he's hilarious. He's obviously, you know, a camera crew has turned up to interview him or just to film him horsing around. And he really takes the bull by the horns and he's the most entertaining thing in it.
Yeah.
He's sort of like doing this faux David Attenborough thing of, you know, here we see the film crew in the wild and they're in the forest and stuff. And he's just spitballing with the team doing this behind the scenes stuff. It's really sweet. He came across really well. But he doesn't like the Doctor and the Doctor doesn't like him.
No.
Because at this point we know that he's a soldier and the Doctor doesn't like soldiers.
Yeah.
Even though this is post the War Doctor, and you think he'd have a bit more of an understanding of what it's like, you know?
That makes absolutely no sense, any of this. I take real issue with this, because he's got a real bloody chip on his shoulder about soldiers. Like you said, he's just had the realisation of the War Doctor and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, he knows what he is, what, you know, the things that he has done, and he's atoned for his sins, basically. Yes. And then literally the following story is going on about how wonderful the Brigadier is. And it's like, well, hang on a minute. Pot kettle black here. Come on. What's going on? And I mean, I think the whole... There's that gag, isn't there, about, oh, he can't teach maths. He can only teach PE. You know, oh, he's a PE teacher. No, he's a maths teacher. That also feels kind of weird. It feels like there's, I don't know. There just feels like there's something under the surface there. Because that starts off in The Caretaker, I think.
It does, yeah. And he just seems like a good bloke. Like, there's nothing about him, apart from the fact that he, like, but even that, like, he's in a relationship with Clara. I found all that stuff with the homework being marked on the TARDIS hilarious, by the way, because Danny clearly thinks she's shagging this bloke.
Yeah.
You know? And like, oh, I thought you said you hadn't seen the Doctor in months.
Yeah.
And this homework's dated from whenever, you know? It's I thought it was really funny.
And I like that sort of stuff, really, because it makes the TARDIS feel like a home.
Totally. Yes, absolutely. Even though this is the point where companions sort of have sabbaticals from the TARDIS.
Yeah.
You know, like the Doctor just picks them up.
Yeah.
Whenever. Which I don't know if I really like all that much.
No, but, nor me. I think
it's a different dynamic.
Yeah.
But I there's a really nice bit. I think when Clara is sort of trying to tempt Danny into travelling in the TARDIS, and he says something like, I've been in a war and I appreciate like the mundanity of life now.
Yeah.
I don't need to go off and explore and see those things. I've seen enough.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really great line, and it's a really nice bit of, you know, character work for Danny Pink.
Yeah.
But we're also meant to not be on his side because the Doctor doesn't like him. And it's just a really odd dynamic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very strange. I don't know. I think a lot of it isn't helped by, on a surface thing, you know, you've got this... You've got, you know, he's a black actor, the Doctor's a white actor,
and that
is what I mean. It's like, oh, well, he can't teach maths, he can only teach PE. And you sort of think, that
was the undercurrent.
That does not sound good.
No.
And, you know, you sort of think, well, you know, this is all being written by white writers as well. And you kind of sort of think, well, surely you should have seen the optics here, that this felt
right. Exactly. Wrong. It's just the optics of it, but it is kind of like noticeable.
Yeah.
And when you said that there's before, you kind of alluded to there being
I was a bit like, shall I just come out and say it? And I thought, well, bollocks, let's just come out and say it.
I think it's fine to. I mean, it's your reading of it. It doesn't, you know, your interpretation of it isn't wrong necessarily. No. It's obviously not what was intended, but. Yeah. If that's what you're getting out of it, then that's what you're getting out of it.
But I think this is indicative of this whole season, because you have you've got that issue. You've got the issue in this story, which is don't take your meds, kids, because you might be receiving signals from outer space, dude. Woo. And then, of course, you've got the other thing, which is like, don't have abortions. You might have a dragon coming out of you.
It's kind of got its. Does it have its heart in the wrong place? Like, I don't know if there are any other kind of Doctor Who stories or seasons where it just kind of misjudges stuff like that badly.
It is really weird. It's really weird. It feels like someone has gone, let's try and make Doctor Who challenging and take challenging issues and try and do them in a Doctor Who-y way, and then they've started to do that and then realise, oh shit, but this is a family show and you know, this might work in Torchwood, but it isn't working in Doctor Who, so let's pull this back and, oh bollocks, oh, now we've kind of, you know, put ourselves in a corner where we're saying abortions are a good idea.
Yeah. What do you think at home, kids? You know, it's like, you know, we have to explain these concepts to kids before we start introducing either one side or the other.
Yeah.
I think it goes over people's heads of a certain age, and that's the audience. Mm. And then on top of that, they've got a Doctor who they're not gelling with because he's mean.
Yeah.
And unpleasant.
Yeah.
Everything just feels really misjudged.
Yeah.
In this series, you're right. It's indicative of this particular season, isn't it?
It's really weird though, because Annie and I watched the documentary about John Nathan Turner the other day, and off the back of that, we watched Trials and Tribulations because she's never seen that.
Yes,
and it just amazes me every time when you see how history repeats itself. You know, you said early on about Colin Baker. And, you know, how Peter Capaldi, you know, is like a reflection of that. It's just history repeating itself. But then you get the whole thing. You have like the high of the 50th anniversary, and then they come back and try to do something different and it doesn't work. And it was the same with JNT. You know, he did the 20th anniversary. He himself said, I probably should have left with that. I was ready to go at that point. And then comes in with this doctor and tries to do something different and it doesn't work. And it's just weird. I don't know, you know, it's weird and how history repeats.
We've said it before, but it does feel a bit like Jodie is the Sylve.
Yeah.
Of just because of the fact generally the audience was had checked out anyway, and those that were still there that weren't going to be fans of it anyway were rallying against it quite publicly in the press. And, you know, it has its fans, and I think it will get its flowers one day, but right now it's not liked at all. And then, you know, rather than the show getting cancelled, it has been given a second chance almost. Yeah. You know, this is what could have happened in 1990, you know. Somebody
this is it. You know, this is...
comes on board and changes it up.
Yeah, I mean, this... what we're getting now is, like, the Dark Dimension, because... Mm. Oh, shit. Everyone loves Tom Baker. He was really good. Let's get him back. And, you know...
Exactly.
What about for the anniversary? What about all the other doctors? Ah, fuck them. Don't worry about that.
It's that same attitude in the 90s. It's that any old twat with an equity card or whatever the line is from Doctor Who Night. And that is how these latter doctors are remembered.
Yeah.
Even the doctor before Capaldi was the youngest at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go back and then it was Peter Davison. It is scary, isn't it?
It's so
odd
bizarre.
How it all just sort of comes back.
It's so bizarre. So I don't know where we are now. Lesson. We're in some weird uncharted territory.
Well, but that's exciting, isn't it? That's what makes this whole new year and this whole what's about to come even more exciting is that there's no, you know,
there's no precedent set.
Yeah. No, exactly. Okay, right. This CGI tiger, Matt, is it CG or is it stock footage? Either way, it looks fucking awful.
It does look crap. And that was the last note I took where I checked out, and it was something like, here we go, the torch and the tiger, as if. When he flicks the torch in his eyes, that tiger would have feckin' eaten him.
And all the kids. And all the kids would have been toothpicks. Yeah. It would have just been... Yeah. So I couldn't tell if it was CG or if they had shot some stuff on a green screen with a tiger.
Some of it.
Okay, right. Because some of it is definitely like, that's a different tiger, that one.
Yeah.
So it feels like it's maybe stock footage, some of it.
Yeah, and the eyes of the wolves in the bushes look so fucking janky.
Isn't it brilliant? That is exactly the kind of thing I would have been able to do with my fan films back then. But that would have been, it's like the inference of there is something scary or something that we can't afford is lurking in the darkness, and this is all we can do, you know. It's nuts. So also another thing, I don't know if Annie picked up on this, but how bad of a teacher Clara is with the kid that just breaks that other kid's nose.
Yeah.
And it's like she's allowed that to escalate. Disagreement between peers has now escalated to a physical assault.
I know.
And she's marking work and she doesn't look up and think there's something going on here.
Yeah, it's bonkers. It's really mad.
Do you think Cole Hill has metal detectors to stop kids bringing knives in? Do you reckon it's that kind of inner city school?
I think so, and I imagine their Ofsted results aren't very good. They're probably... Ofsted's got a close eye on them.
I mean, it's a wonder that whatever Ofsted was as an entity back in the 60s didn't shut it down when two of the teachers and a pupil went missing. But
I mean, that's it. They've got previous, haven't they, at Cole Hill School?
I know. Why was it overrun by soldiers in the 80s? Like, this is just bonkers.
It's weird, isn't it?
In the 60s, sorry.
They probably think, oh my God, this place has got a reputation. It must be one of those schools where you're like, oh, they go to Cole Hill, and you think, oh shit, that's rough.
I love it. Okay. So yeah, we've talked about the trees and fuck, I'm losing the will to live. I've got more notes to more likes and dislikes to get to, so it might just be worth just going through those now.
Yeah, go on. Oh, the console room.
In terms
room
of the
nice.
Story,
that was nice.
Console
to see.
Room looks lovely.
A good console room again. Yeah.
I love the visual of the kids in there as well. Yeah. I think that's really sweet because you know, and that great shot. It's nicely directed. Not sure who directed it, but that nice shot where the kid puts his face up and goes, what are the round things for?
Yeah,
and, you know,
really
all that
good.
Sort of stuff.
Yeah,
there's a lot
of interesting direction in this. And again, that is one of the nice things about this story. And actually, I think the kids are all pretty good, you know, this sort of era has got a thing about using kids because you've got Nightmare in Silver, the kids in that, and then previously in The Caretaker. And this one, I think, like you said earlier, you know, it sort of lands in this one. They all sort of seem to work.
The kids are fine as actors as well. Like, they're very, there's that one girl who is very drama school. I mean, they all kind of are.
Yeah.
And that's what I find really funny is when they dress them and it's like, you know, they don't go to school like that. You know, their ties aren't fat and they don't have their shirts tucked in and they go around with like headphones on their shoulders. Yeah. Like, that is such a... That is such a nobody here writing this or doing this knows
has
what kids dress like.
Yeah.
You know, like
it's a real cliche.
It's hilarious. Considering Frank Cottrell Boyce doesn't he write kids' books and stuff? And
don't know, might do.
Anyway, I've got that working class chip on my shoulder is starting to emerge a little bit. And like, when some of these child actors, you know, oh my God, they're going to die. Oh my, you know, it's just like fuck off. Okay, if we skip right to the end. Oh, no, question. So the trees sprout up. There are events through history where the trees have protected Earth before.
Yeah.
Not Adric, when he crashed the freighter into Earth. So, you know.
They were looking the other way at that point, those trees.
They went, look, you know, maybe we just turned a blind eye to this one. You know. Missy appears, Matt, at the end.
Oh yeah, that's really random. It feels
and
so.
And she
out
says
of place.
Something like, "What does she say?" Like,
I can't remember now.
Or I love a bit of mischief or something.
It's somewhat weird like that. It has no bearing on anything. But it's just, it's literally put there just to go, remember her, remember this woman we've been teasing throughout the rest of this series.
This is when the story arcs start just being, you know, remember this word or this person's going to come up, appear at the end. You know, it's just, so I haven't really got anything else about this story in terms of running through it, but the finale trailer.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of the Clara Who? That's the whole thing that happens.
All that stuff, yeah.
You know, Osgood puffing on her inhaler. Cybermen outside St. Paul's Cathedral.
Yeah.
It kind of makes me feel like we should have an arc on the Review of Death this year where rather than bouncing back and forth between new series and classic series, maybe we just stick with Series 8 in terms of new series reviews and we just watch Series 8 and like...
And just remind ourselves of what it was like.
Yeah, or like, you know, because I've seen Sam Dimmy has been on Twitter sort of saying, oh, well, I watched Series 9 or I'm rewatching the Capaldi
era.
Actually all right or whatever.
Yeah.
It might be interesting to do at some point. Mm. Right. I mentioned earlier, I watched Doctor Who Extra. As I said, Samuel Anderson is great in it.
Yeah.
Moff, this is Stephen Moffat's quote from it. It's one of the most lyrical and beautiful episodes we've ever had on Doctor Who. Doctor Who is about Earth being invaded, but this is the Earth invading us. This is about what would happen if the trees turned against us. And again... You know, I'm sure it's difficult to get good sound bites out of, you know, a producer when they're making the show. They're not going to say, well, that one was a bit of a stinker. But it's just like it's press junket fluff, you know, that no one's actually saying anything. There is a fact file about previous, horticultural Doctor Who monsters where the crinoids are pronounced crinoids,
which
I thought was... marvelous. And here are some more things that irrationally annoyed me in this story, Matt.
Right.
You have reached your destination, says the TARDIS at the start. When did the TARDIS fucking speak?
I know. That is very annoying. I thought that. I don't think I'd ever noticed it before. And I was like, what?
Is it because, like, that is usually where the scanner screen would open.
Yeah.
And they would look out and see where they are or, we've landed or... But can't you tell that you've landed when the, you know, whooshing and whirring stops and the thing stops spinning above your head?
Yeah.
Like, it's just a bit weird. Feels like something that was maybe had to be done on the day.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, we've not really made this clear enough here or whatever it is. The titles are out of sync one.
I didn't notice. I don't like, I just couldn't get past the...
It's not a great title sequence in that it's... flat, you know, like it's
there's no real depth to it.
No, there's no depth to it, and it, a bit like the 7B one where it just sort of feels like stock images sort of coming towards you rather than you're going through a vortex or whatever.
So it's a
big downgrade from what's come before it, but you could at least, just to give it a chance of looking competent, you could have at least synced the fucking music properly. Like, There is a cue, a visual cue for when the sequence is supposed to start. It's the bit where one of the cogs lights up at the start.
Yeah.
This is somebody who doesn't care enough about their job doing this, you know? Like, it's baffling. It's nuts. Do you think the trees organize spring on tree Facebook, says the Doctor, like communicating between each other?
Yeah.
But they do. That's how trees communicate. They chat to each other through their roots in the soil and like pass information between each other. Why would the Doctor not know that?
Yeah, there's a few instances. I think Peter plays it well when you have those instances where the kid says something insightful and they sort of go, and I think he does it well. But yeah, there are occasions where you think, come on, Doctor, you're not an idiot.
Exactly. Things I liked. I liked Murray's score. I thought it was quite nice in this story.
There were bits of it where I was like, oh, that's in Lego Dimensions.
I'm glad that people have pointed this out to us, that however much music ends up in the story is not down to the composer, it's down to the director. And, you know, Murray just scores stuff and they just use whatever they want to use. But there were a couple of moments where I thought, we don't need music here.
Yeah.
I think that's just the thing I have with the modern series, is that it feels like it's a bit too lathered, certain scenes. We don't need to have all the stuff playing in the background. And Michael Pickwood, is the last thing that I've got on my notes, says that the lions that they climb up on Trafalgar Square are actually one-to-one reproductions of the lions in Trafalgar Square.
Wow, very nice.
With all that said, Matt, what did we think of In the Forest of the Shite?
It's a story that I think starts off with an interesting hook and an interesting visual. I think, you know, mentioning the crinoids, this story might have worked better as an actual alien invasion crinoid story. I think you could have had a bit more fun with it. Maybe not with, like, school children being devoured by, carnivorous plants. But, it's just... It's so weird, because you just sort of feel like, what was the point in that? The whole thing, just, you know, because even the doctor's like, oh, well, you'll just forget, because that's what you do.
Oh, that whole thing as well, that's what humans are great at, is just forgetting stuff. And it's like, okay, I get that you're trying to infer that is why everybody forgets about these alien invasions and stuff. But didn't Stephen expressly do something at some point where the universe resets itself in the Big Bang and everybody's forgotten everything that came before it?
He's kind of
explained that now. Yeah. You know, like, yeah, again, just another example of seemingly things not being communicated properly, or... you know, people not taking enough care in those bits of attention to detail.
It's crazy, you know, and you think, you know, it would be all over social media and all over the news, you know, it'd be like us not remembering that COVID happened, you know, it's mad.
And something else I thought, we were talking about direction. I don't know if I loved it or hated it. When we pull out of the Earth, which is a great visual of the green planet, I also really like the visual of the trees without any rings on the inside.
That's clever.
I thought that was very Doctor Who, you know, that was cool. What did you think of all of those screens coming
the
around the Earth and then we see all the news stuff? There was one that made me laugh of the guy stood in the forest with the goalposts behind him going, the game will now be delayed for however long. I thought that was quite funny. But that was like a really, Doctor Who doesn't really do directorial choices like that, does it?
Yeah, and it just looked... I just don't think it looked particularly good. You know, it just... there was just something... It looked like, oh, quick, let's go into some Adobe plugin that we've got.
It reminded me big time of... Missy, I am now talking to you through the square window. It reminded me of that of, like, visual effect. Like... Again, I know that this is probably not what people have heard. They've probably heard us both ripping this one a new, you know, proverbial all the way through this. And I don't want to dislike Doctor Who.
I never want
to dislike Doctor Who.
No.
And I know, obviously, it seems like we have a real thing against this particular era and those involved in it or whatever it is. I can't help the way I feel about this particular... Yeah. era in the program, and it happened again right at the start. Like, you know, you give these things the benefit of the doubt. We've talked about this before on the podcast.
Yeah.
And then something happens, and then you remember the bigger picture. You remember the series as a whole.
Yeah.
And then I was like, Danny Pink. Oh yeah, he's quite a nice character, actually. I'm enjoying Danny Pink here. He turns into a Cyberman. Oh fuck, Cyberbrig.
Yeah.
Fuck
this. This is it.
This is a load of rubbish. You know, and it happens. I don't know if that's the way my brain works. Maybe I need to go and speak to somebody about that. But,
and I mean,
you know, I can't disconnect that stuff from what I'm watching in the moment. It's so annoying.
Yeah, and seeing the finale trailer and seeing the Doctor board that bloody plane and that whole president of the earth. Oh, what that old shit. It's like, come on, please.
Does he skydive in that one?
Yeah.
Is that the one he jumps out of the plane?
James Bond bit. I like that.
Does he not also do that in the Zygon inversion? Doesn't he parachute out of a plane in that one?
With a James Bond Union Jack parachute.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder... I mean, I suppose Peter Capaldi's cool with it. He must be a Rangers supporter if he's parachuting with a Union Jack flag. Because, like... I wonder how everybody in Scotland kind of felt about that. You know, it's a bit of a hang on. He's
Well, I mean, and Moff's a Scottish writer, so I don't know. Mm. They must have all been on board. I'm sure he's a Union Jack. I'm sure it's like Bond. Maybe I've got that wrong. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. But I'm sure.
That's so weird. Why not for a laugh? Why wasn't it tartan? If you really want to, you know, let's go really stereotypical with it. Or like, you know, he parachutes and it just says tenants across the top or Buckfast or something, you know, why not? Yeah.
I mean, technically it should have a unit logo on it if it's a unit bloody plane.
It should have a Brigadier's face
on it. Seeing as his face is on everything else.
Yes.
It should just have Nick Courtney on the top.
It's a warning to any UFOs flying above. Like, you know, this planet is defended. Yeah. And it's his fucking face.
The flying saucers are going over the top like, oh, shit, it's in with the moustache again.
Oh, shit, it's the brig.
Oh, bollocks, quick. Reverse, go on.
Or maybe Brigadier Bambera instead.
Yeah. I heard something the other day, and I don't know if anyone in the comments can shine a light on this for me, because I just saw it in someone's Twitter feed. But apparently, for that Zygon story, there was talk about getting Angela Bruce back to play Bambera. Now, obviously, that didn't happen. But if anyone actually can corroborate this or, you know, give us some more information, I would love to know, because I love Brigadier Bambera and I think it's shocking that she hasn't come back, especially in the light of having the Brigadier's daughter who is about as entertaining as a fish finger.
So I like fish fingers.
Yeah, I like fish fingers.
I
wouldn't want to watch one on television, though.
We should eat fish fingers and custard on this at some point. Maybe when we have an episode where we're not going to talk about...
Can you get fish fingers in that country?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Bird's eye?
Yeah, you can get fish fingers here. Yeah, proper bird's eye, yeah. They use different fish here. Like, the fish and chip stuff isn't cod.
What,
it's
tropical
snapper.
Fish?
It's a... Yeah, loads of little proper Nemos fish. Lined up. Battered. Proper British fish in this foreign country. I demand proper British fish. Have we got anything else to say about this, Matt? Because I feel like we're just going to dig ourselves a hole and say something.
I don't know. I've just noticed I've got the plant over here. I should have put more plants around the set.
That would have been great.
I should have just been like, oh, no. Oh
no.
Been invaded. Been invaded. Quick, get the flamethrowers out. Burn them down.
Fuck. That was better than watching In the Forest of the Night. If you've never seen In the Forest of the Night, just that's it, basically.
And then
worse.
Whoa, they disappeared. Wasn't that nice?
There we go. And then this girl suddenly steps out from behind that bush.
Oh, who's this? Oh, you've come home.
All right, it's not going to be topped, is it? That's the peak of this review.
Yeah, sorry, audio listeners. You'll have to go to YouTube.
Yeah, that was
you're
gonna have to watch the video version to get the full routine there. Well, there we go. Doctor Who in the Forest of the Shite.
In the Forest of the Night, I was walking in my sleep.
And a tiger came out and attacked me, and... So next up, we may or may not have an interview, but you know, look, we'll, you know, that's still in discussion. That's still going to happen. Maybe.
Yeah.
But maybe you guys should tell us what you want to see. Cause
next
actual episode that I've got written down here, because you know, usually when we do when birthdays come up between you and I, we watch our favourite stories.
Yeah.
We've just had the Five Doctors.
Yeah.
And I did have, for my birthday pick this year, Genesis. But, you know, we don't want to run through all the good ones. You know, we don't want to burn through all the good episodes. Yeah. So, if you guys have a suggestion of something to watch, maybe an episode from the Capaldi era that you think is like, this is the one that everybody who's a detractor of this era actually should watch because it's really good.
Or a Series 6 episode, equally, because Series 6 is another one that we always struggle with.
Exactly. Maybe, what Series 6 episode did I have down for later in the year?
I tell you one that I've never got, and I know people love it. It's that one where there's two Amy Ponds.
The girl who died. Waited.
Girl who waited. The girl who waited. Did something. Yeah.
The girl who happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we could definitely do that. I also have down on here, maybe we can do this later in the year anyway, I have Let's Kill Hitler.
Yeah.
And a town called Mercy. Oh no, hang on. Let's Kill Hitler is Series 7, isn't it? But I have, yeah. Anyway,
those are
some things to ponder, Rodders. You let us know what you want to see. In the meantime, go and check out the Patreon where you can get access to loads of really, really cool things, commentaries, bonus reviews. There's a bonus live show on there that we don't talk about enough. There's a whole thing of Matt and Johnny at the University of Oxford talking about Ghostlight, which is really cool.
Forgot about that.
And yeah, loads of other funky, cool things that we're going to be doing through this year. And Matt, you are really good at the plugging stuff. Tell your friends, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, tell your friends about this podcast, whether you want to share it. Oh, I need microphones. Come out. This is good. Professional. I sat on it and it popped out of its holder. Tell your friends about
this
podcast.
Talking about your microphone.
If you like Doctor Who and if you like irreverent madness that we whittle on about, then share it around, like, subscribe, all of those things that, you know, just helps show your support to the channel, to the series, and just gives us more incentive to keep doing this shit because we love it.
Yeah,
but
we love it.
The more you love it, the more we love it. So, you know,
exactly.
You scratch our back, we'll scratch yours.
Yeah,
I guess.
What's that Red Dwarf quote? I'll scratch your back, you stick a knife in mine.
Yeah, we won't do that, but
But we might review some Red Dwarf on the Patreon this year.
Yeah, we should.
And we should also get around to some Bonds as well, I think.
So there's stuff to come. Yeah, I think that's a good idea for to do that other stuff as patron things because, you know, it would be weird to do it as part of the main series because people would be like,
totally.
Why are they suddenly talking about James Bond? But yeah.
It's the same reason why we don't do Big Finish as part of the main podcast because, you know, that's a smaller audience as well.
It's niche.
And totally. But if you want to hear our thoughts on Big Finish, go to the Patreon. We're going to do all the wants and futures from this year. When it comes around to the actual anniversary itself, we're going to do Zagreus.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do that.
In November.
Yeah.
Which is exciting. So, yeah, man, it's an exciting year for Doctor Who, but it's a really exciting year for the podcast as well, because it's the 60th anniversary, so we want to put out all the stops and keep making loads of stuff and join the Discord and get... My stomach is rumbling like a motherfucker. I'm really sorry.
Go and have some breakfast.
It's basically my stomach saying... Get it out now.
Oh.
You've been sat on this sofa for too long. You've sat here for too long. There's a nice conversation about my bowel movements to round it out. That also you can expect on the Patreon as well. And, you know, we don't talk about poo and stuff on the Review of Death Discord, but it's a nice community full of cool folks showing off loads of cool things.
People
who went to the Doctor Who filming and took photos with Shooty, they post it in the chat and all that kind of stuff. It's nice.
Speaking of, did you see Shooty's new costume?
Russell likes the kind of leather look, right?
Well, clearly. I hate it, but
I'm kind of hoping that it's just like, oh, I've just come into this from an adventure in the 50s. Let me get changed.
Because it felt too much like, because I thought it was just Shooty had turned up in his glad rags. You know, I thought this was just in between things. And then when we actually saw them filming, I was like, what? That's not Doctor Who.
It's a bit nuts. But I guess Al is rubbing his hands going, oh my God, all these different costume variations.
Yeah, I've not asked him about it. I need to message him and be like, right, come on, what's going on here?
let's get Al back on the podcast this year as well. I'm sure people would love to ask him more questions about the action figures and all that sort of stuff. It feels like we only just scratched the surface of that.
There's so much we could talk about
earlier in the year. If you haven't seen that episode, check it out, because it's definitely one of my favourites. I love that.
It was good. It was good fun. In fact, we might actually get him, because I've already sort of poached the idea, and I think we might even try and get him here on the sofa of
Reasonable Comfort. Is we should get him in the room, and then we'll have a locked off camera, and he can show us some prototypes or some cool things he could bring along, maybe.
Yeah, who knows? We'll have to see.
We can, that would be fun. Anyway, all that is still to come. Yeah. So if you want to see that and you want to keep the podcast going and support us and, you know, all that sort of stuff, then share it around. If you can't support the Patreon, man, my feces are rising into my brain now and making me unable to speak.
And please, please support the Patreon so that my microphone clip doesn't break off.
And you've got to keep me in copies of the Web of Fear as well, because that's my first Doctor Who purchase I've made in this country, and so that's coming up later this year as well. You've got that to look forward to.
Oh my god. Right, well, in that case, we'll see you all next time for whatever you guys decide we should watch next. So thank you all for watching, and we'll see you then. Cheerio. Bye-bye.
Bye.